We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Karina Mustafa, alongside Calvin Wetzel. And today is going to be all about the WNBA Finals. The Liberty were able to force a game four, much against what we had discussed on last week's podcast. We're also going to get into our player of the week later. But Cal, you ready?
Always ready. Let's go, Cree.
All right. Well, first and foremost, before we get into any WNBA finals discourse, just want to say, like, we hope Chelsea Gray is okay. That looked like a pretty scary injury near the end of game three. And just per reports and the unnecessary footage that ESPN provided on TV and on social media, it didn't look like she could walk on her own. She was on crutches. So we don't know what the update is as of now, but we do hope she's okay because, you know, like, it always sucks to see players get hurt, and she's a very important piece to this Aces team.
Yeah, I would love to be wrong. We're recording on Tuesday morning, so who knows when we get the official report, but it doesn't really feel like she's going to be playing again in this series. Like I said, I really hope I'm wrong, because that is just, like, it doesn't matter who you're rooting for. Like, you don't want to see that. You don't want to see Stars or anyone go out and just someone who's, like, as important as she has been to the Aces team. Like, it's, you hate it as a basketball fan and as a person. Like, she was obviously in so much pain, and I hate that. So would love to somehow see, you know, how it looked, not really be what ends up happening, and see her come back in this finals would be great. But it's kind of hard to see that happening, unfortunately.
Yeah. So we wish her all the best, and we are currently still waiting for the update as of Tuesday morning. But all right, let's get into the series itself, because the Liberty avoided the sweep. They came out with a pretty solid win against the Las Vegas Aces in game three. So what was the biggest adjustment that you saw from the Liberty in game three to get them that win?
I think, you know, the defensive matchups that they switched up, they, you know, they had guards, Sabrina or Sloot, depending on, you know, that some of each guarding Kia Stokes, which, like we talked about last time, you know, when Kia has the ball, I didn't think they had necessarily done a great job on her, but when she doesn't have the ball, you really should be using whoever's on her as just a sort of a rover and a help defender. And I think that allowed them to do that. They had Stewie on Chelsea Gray, and then they had the biggest one, Benaja Laney, on Jackie Young. We saw Jackie sort of go out. We were talking about her as a X Factor possible finals MVP. She only had, what was it, 8 or 9 points in this game?
Yeah, she had 9 points.
And I think that's a huge credit to Benaja Laney, and also, yeah, obviously Sandy Brondello for switching up those matchups, which I think worked out great. Now, if you're Becky Hammon, like, you heard her in the post-game press conference say, you know, they switched matchups, and that really shouldn't make up a 40-point gap, I think it was, or whatever it was, from the margin in game two to the margin in game three. And she's right. Like, no, we talked about it this in the last podcast too. There's no one thing that you can really do to make up a 40-point gap. So that's it was more than that. Obviously, shots went in. They really came out. We'll talk about this with a lot more energy in front of their home crowd. They were just more locked in. But in terms of actual schematics, the matchups, I think, played a big part, and definitely something that we'll have to see how the Aces kind of hit back in game four.
Yeah, and I think for me, like, even on the defensive side of the floor, it very much felt like more of a team effort. Like, it felt like every single Liberty player that was on the court was extremely active, like, including, like, Courtney Vandersloot, who we talked about, who struggled within the first two games of the series. But I thought she was way more active defensively. Like, she got a couple of hands on the balls when the Aces were in their offensive on the offensive side of the court. And then also just like the Laney hustle defense, like that one play where she like runs all like throughout the court to catch up with Jackie and prevent that layup. Like, it was little things like that, that everybody was just doing their job. It felt like they were communicating better and nobody let up. I think that was one of the biggest things that I was keeping my eye on, because the second that the Liberty let up that defensive intensity, the Aces could have ran away with it so quick, but it never happened. And I like that I saw that, because that's kind of been an issue that they've struggled with throughout the season, where they'll either start out the first half strong and then finish the second half kind of sloppy and just not with where they were in the first half, or it'll be the other way around, where they start out the first half sloppy and then they pick it up in the second, but it's not enough to fix whatever happened in the first half. So it's nice to see that energy throughout all four quarters. And I'm sure that's something that Coach Sandy was really harping on and probably really liked to take away from that. But yeah, Jackie Young, we talked about her. She had a pretty quiet 9 points after, you know, we were calling her the finals MVP in the first two games of the series, posting up 26 and 24. So to get 9 points from a player who started out the series is as on fire as she did, I think that was key. Even Asia had 16 points. And, you know, even with Asia Wilson, because, you know, she is the MVP of this team in general, and the Aces can win games even if she doesn't hit 20 points. The fact that they were able to just really focus on each of their matchups, I think, went really well for them. And then you saw that the offense just kind of flowed after that. Like, I know that's such a saying that gets said over and over, that like good defense leads to good offense, but it's so true. And I feel like this game was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, it's true, obviously, in terms of getting out in transition. You know, you get stops and you get those opportunities. And it's true just in terms of that energy sort of being contagious. And, you know, one side feeds off the other, and some players are feeding off other players and feeding off the crowd and all of that. And that whole snowball sort of got going for the Liberty, I think, which is, I feel like when you really see the Liberty at their best this year is when you get that snowball effect, when you get one thing and another thing and another thing, it starts to really get that momentum going. And I think we saw that. But it's like you said, like, they were locked in for 40 minutes this game, and we've seen them, you know, they really got dominated pretty well in those first two games. But it's not like we didn't see any flashes of them being really locked in. That first half in game one, Liberty played pretty well. They were up at halftime, but they hadn't sustained it until this game. And it's an accumulation of those little things. Like, you brought up that Laney play. There was a Jonquel Jones play, I think. So in game two, I don't know if you remember the Asia Wilson up and under where she got Stewie really good. And then she did the same thing in game three, that same little up and under move. And Jonquel was there on the help side to take that away. It was the same play, but JJ was there. And it's just like, that 40-point gap that you make up, you make up 1 or 2 points with that Laney play. You make up 1 or 2 points with the Jonquel play. You make up 2 points here, 2 points there. And you put it all together possession by possession, staying locked in and making those plays on every individual possession. And it adds up throughout the course of the game. You can hit a bunch of singles, and all of a sudden you're back in the game and even winning the game compared to where you were at that same point in game two. And I think that's what the Liberty did.
It's true. And like, I don't like to use this stat to kind of drive a lot of the narrative a lot of the times, because sometimes it's not very accurate, but like, all Liberty starters were above plus 15. at the end of the game. Like, there was nobody, like, the bench was in that minus, but all Liberty starters were in the plus, and it, like, it just showed how much they were contributing and being able to stay in front, and, like, nobody was really stopping anything from happening or, you know, just kind of letting up. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was like, there was like plus 16, plus 17, plus 22, a couple of players were, which I think, you know, speaks a lot to how that game went.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. Sometimes that stat doesn't mean anything. In this game, I think it absolutely meant a lot. And especially if you look at the first two games, the Liberty, all five starters were minus 10 or worse in both of those games, which it's only happened 10 times in finals history. And two of them were in that game. And
lovely.
The Aces starter, shout out to Cross the Timeline for that, by the way. The Aces starters were all minus 10 in this game. So they totally flipped the script in that regard. Obviously, if all your starters are plus on one side, they're arguably minus on the other side. But yeah, you're right. It just really speaks to how they were playing.
Absolutely. And we kind of touched on it a little bit, because that home court advantage, it felt like, even though, and I was looking at Sabrina Ionescu as one of those players who might feel more comfortable at home, she did only have 9 points. However, I felt like her 3-point shot felt way more comfortable than it did in the first two games. And you could see, like, the emotions, like, she was screaming after, like, big plays. Do you think that's, like, a little warm up for what's about to happen in game four, that she's like, you know what, like, I'm at home, I got some of my, like, crazy 3-point shots in game three, now it's really time for me to unleash?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's sort of the quintessential player who fits in that kind of momentum snowball that we talked about, where when that energy gets going, that's when she's at her best. And I mean, she had 11 assists. She played great. Yeah. She had 9 points, but she played great. I think we're going to continue to see that game four. And I think going back to those defensive matchups, you know, when you talk about Sabrina didn't have to follow Jackie Young around for 40 minutes and guard who at times was the best player on the floor, I think, in those first two games, when you don't have to worry about that as much and expend that energy, that sort of frees you up on the offensive end too. And so I think we saw some of that from Sabrina, and just all around, like, really important development for the Liberty to see that. And 9 points is extremely misleading. Like you said, she was back, and we could see that full on explosion coming in game four. It's definitely possible.
Yeah. So if anybody's a betting person out there, actually, no, maybe don't take my advice, but it's just, I don't know, maybe something to keep an eye on. But yeah, okay. So that's, like, on the Liberty side. Let's talk a little bit about the Aces side. What did they struggle with in game three? Because this time Kelsey Plum was the leading scorer. Nobody really came close to her. She finished with 29. What did they struggle with in game three? Whether that's, like, what the Liberty made them do, or maybe something on their end.
Yeah, obviously, you know, they had a tough time getting Jackie going because of what the Liberty did with those matchups. You know, they struggled to hit shots for the first time in this series, shot 31% from three, which you can probably factor in some of the home court environment into that. I think, you know, the Aces haven't won in that building yet, and they haven't really been that close yet this year out of three tries. So they've dominated the Liberty a few times, but they've all been at home for them. And if you, another, you know, point that Becky brought up, if you listen to the post game pressers, just that, according to her, they messed up all their screen coverages. She had a funny quote about it. someone asked her about the different screen coverages they were running, and she just said, listen, it doesn't matter what the, you know, whether we were at the level, horizontal, parallel, I think I'm paraphrasing. I'm trying to remember her words, but they were all wrong. We messed them all up. And so whatever they were supposed to be on any given possession, she wasn't very happy with it, which I'm sure is something that she will be cleaning up heading into game four. That's not something that a team that well coached with that much experience and veteran leadership messes up twice in a row. So, I would expect that to sort of, be something that they fix, but yeah, it's again, accumulation of a bunch of things that really need sort of the tables turned, and tables need to turn back if the Aces are going to close it out in game four.
Yeah, and I'm sure Becky gave them, like, very stern talk in the locker room. Like, I just love, like, Becky Hammon. Like, it's just as an aside, like, her personality is so funny. I think, like, she's one of the most interesting coaches to talk to in post-game, pre-game media. I think she gives, like, amazing quotes, and, like, her personality just shines through. And so, yeah, no, she's just a fun person. And just kind of, like, a big reason why this Aces team is just so dominant. And I, yeah, like, to be clear, like, I'm not expecting this game to go again. I mean, again, it does depend if Chelsea Gray is playing or not, but at the same time, you know, the Aces are still the Aces, so I'm very interested to see what is going to happen in game four. The big question is, do you think that they can repeat that and force a game five? Like, are the Liberty going to be able to do the unthinkable here?
I think so. And I hate talking about why, because I think the biggest reason why is just that I'm not sure if Chelsea Gray is going to play, and I hate it. It sucks, but it really does change the complexion of this series. And if she plays, to be clear, if I'm wrong, I think the Aces are fully favored, and I don't think this series goes to game five. But if Chelsea Gray doesn't play, you're talking about that domino effect with the bench that we've talked about all season long with the Aces, where they're just one injury away and they have depth issues and they can kind of manage them because their starters are so good. But what happens when you lose one or two of those starters? And over the offseason, we looked at, okay, they weren't very deep last year. They brought in Candace Parker. They brought in Alicia Clark. Now they have seven legitimately solid players. Then they lose Candace Parker. Now they're down to really Alicia Clark, who was great all year, sixth woman of the year. Now, if Chelsea Gray isn't playing, you're putting Alicia Clark into the starting lineup. You still got five starters you can trust, but now what? Are they playing 40 minutes? Are you going to Kirsten Bell? Sid Coulson? I love Sid Coulson. I'm not sure if Becky was planning on playing her heavy minutes in the finals. without Chelsea Gray, she's going to be playing some minutes, I'm sure, but you'll probably see Kelsey Plum played 40 minutes last game. I'm sure she'll play 40 again. Probably see Jackie out there for 40 minutes, maybe Asia. So their depth is going to be really tested without Chelsea Gray. And obviously, she runs the show. Asia's the best player, but your point guard runs the show. So, yeah, I definitely think the Liberty, if Chelsea doesn't play, could get it back to Vegas. And who knows in a game five, again, if Chelsea still isn't back by then, anything could happen. Anything could happen in that game. I think the Liberty would face a tall task even without Chelsea, just going out there in that environment in a winner-take-all game. But they have an advantage at that point personnel-wise, so it could definitely happen. And this could be that series that we talk about for the rest of WNBA history. Every time someone gets down 0-2 in a playoff series, if that happens, we'll be talking about, well, it's happened one time, 2023 Liberty, the only team to do it. Maybe we'll be putting an asterisk on it because maybe Chelsea Gray isn't there, which is a huge asterisk. But this could be that series that gets brought up year after year as that one time, every time someone goes down 0-2.
I wonder if an argument maybe against that, and I'm not saying I disagree, like I totally agree. I wonder if like an argument made is that the Liberty were still kind of on track to win that game, even with Chelsea Gray in, just based with like all the adjustments they made. But again, like if Chelsea doesn't play in game four, then like you have no way of knowing if they would have been able to repeat that, or if it was just like a one-off they were able to adjust in that game. But yeah, no, I totally agree. It sucks. Like, and the thing is, this kind of thing happens in sports all the time. Like I'm wearing my Raptors shirt. Like if we're going to talk about the Raptors, like their championship in 2019, people love to put asterisks on it because of the Warriors team where KD went down, Klay Thompson went down. And I'm just like, well, okay, all the Raptors players were injured too. But anyway, that's another discussion for another podcast. But I think my point, overall point being, is that it feels like there is always going to be asterisks when something happens that is like outside of the normal expectations of which teams are going to win what and how much. So no, it's definitely interesting, but it seems like just a normal topic in sports discourse. But really hope that Chelsea Gray is okay, like outside of all this. Before we move on to our player of the week, you know, we kind of talked about Stewie last week, so I want to do like a little check-in with her. What you thought of her in game three, and if it gave you any confidence moving to game four of what she can be for the team. I know she had that very, very exciting block on Asia Wilson that I immediately went to Twitter and was like, that is a volleyball block. There's a reason why Stewie is on my all basketball volleyball team. Like the timing on it was incredible. Like, I feel like if there was a way to encapsulate the game, it was that play. But no, what did you think of her in game three at home?
Yeah, well, that block was amazing. First off, there's I have to shout out my team. I've made it. What episode is this? Number nine? Number 10?
Yeah.
I've made number it nine. Like nine episodes. Granted, we haven't talked about college basketball yet. I've made it nine episodes without talking about Illinois State. So I think it's fine. Kate Bullman, fantastic shot blocker, Illinois State. The coach texted me after that block and was like, Stewie's looking like Kate Bullman out here with that block, which is. No one who's listening knows what that means, but go watch Kate Bullman and then you'll know what I mean. Anyway, I think Stewie, like, you know, we still didn't get that sort of vintage, like 35 point type of what we saw, you know, last year in that Storm Aces, I think really a couple times, but in one game in particular in that semifinal series that I'm thinking of. But like, we didn't need to. That's the thing on this team, is that when you have someone like Jonquel Jones, who we're going to get to, putting in 27 points, when you have, you know, Benaja Laney playing how she is on Jackie in that matchup, and Sabrina starts knocking down threes and she's finding people again. Like, Stewie was able to just be her, and really she played, I think, great defense on Chelsea and help side all throughout the game. Obviously she hit some shots. She didn't need to go off for 30 or 40, but, yeah, I think she's back. Like, and she hasn't been the best player on this team in the playoffs or in the finals, and she doesn't need to be. She might need to be if they get to a game five on the road. We'll see. Cause that's your time more than any other time when you need your MVP to step up. But I enjoyed watching Stewie. I'm not going to lie. That was a fun game for her.
Yeah, like, I felt like a lot of little things too. Like, she finished with 20 points. Like, there was that one play at the beginning in the first half where Sab passed it to her and she was able to finish right there with the layup. I just think it was little things like that maybe starts to get some of her confidence back. I know a lot of it has been weird, like, three-point shooting and her threes not really going in, and so it's just kind of like, okay, well, how do you work around that now and kind of make some adjustments, because she can score in other ways. Like, I don't think like Stewie needs to rely on her three-point shooting, and so I think I saw like little flashes of that in game three, and hopefully, like, again, like we talked about with Sabrina too, like, maybe they're all just a little bit more comfortable in game four now that they've had that one win at home. So yeah, very interested to see what happens in game four. I really, really want that game five, just for, you know, being greedy for more basketball. I don't think I'm like completely ready to part with the WNBA season just yet. So that's definitely another reason. But yeah, we're both hoping for that game five.
As you know, as a basketball fan, definitely. And also, you know, these teams still haven't really played a close game yet. And I mean, maybe game four is that, but it would be, I don't know if poetic is the word. It would feel, just something would be sort of right about it if somehow these teams play like 15 straight blowouts and half of them go each way, which makes no sense. And then they get to game five and finally have that down to the wire, some type of reader, you know, for someone to win the finals. I think that would be pretty cool. Whoever it is, like, just, I would love to see one close game, and game five feels like that's the moment, if it's going to happen, where we get it.
It's true. And I've like brought it before. I brought it up before on this podcast, I think, like, even before the series started, where, again, I'm going back to the Raptors in 2019, but their semifinal series against the 76ers, every single game was a blowout until game seven, and nobody had any idea who was going to win. And then it came down to that final Kawhi buzzer beater, like, literally the greatest moment of my life. I think I was happier with that buzzer beater than the actual championship, but that's another thing. But it was just so crazy. I think something that kind of parallels that would be pretty awesome. And that's the first thing, obviously, that I think of, you know, being from, I just want to know, like, if podcast listeners don't know, like, I am from Toronto, Canada. I am Canadian. Like, I feel like there might be some people who maybe don't know me who are like, why does she always bring up the Raptors? But yeah, let's just make that clear. But anyway, okay. Game four is set for Wednesday when you are listening to this podcast. So make sure you go and tune into that. Moving on to our player of the week. If I had a drum roll, I would do a drum roll, but Cal kind of spoiled it.
Can
like
you hear it?
5 minutes ago.
Can you hear this through my mic? Is it coming
through? I can hear it, yeah.
Okay, I don't know if they can hear it, but I'm doing it.
It is Jonquil Jones. Woo, okay. She has been phenomenal. She had 27 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals in game 3, leading the Liberty to that win. She's been phenomenal the entire playoffs. Like, I think if you had, I went on SNY after the game and I was like, if you had like a playoff MVP, like outside of finals MVP, like the entire playoffs MVP, I feel like that would be Jonquil Jones for Liberty, because they would not be in this situation without her. Like, you look at that Mystic series, you look at that series against the Sun, like she was the factor. Like, she was the reason they got out of those series. And if they're able to pull off the most incredible comeback ever, she is going to be a big, big reason why that happens. But yeah, what did you think about her performance in game 3, but also overall?
Yeah, I mean, what stood out to me, she played 40 minutes. Because in those first two games, she was absolutely dominant for 20 minutes. And then in the second half, they kind of took her out of the game. Now in game 2, obviously that was because they switched, they came out the second half with Asia guarding her, and they had Kia Stokes on her before that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Asia's going to take anyone out of the game, so it makes sense. But we really saw, I think, Jonquil finally exert herself start to finish. Like you said, 27, and I don't even know what the rest of her line was, a million rebounds.
4 threes, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals.
55 of everything, 55 points, 55. And the 3 that you put up there was, I think, so it wasn't quite a career high. She's had 5 threes a couple times in 2018. It was tied for a season high, most that she's had in 5 years, 4 for 7 from 3. And that's huge. That's when you're doing, because we've seen Jonquil, obviously she can knock down the 3, you know, but usually she's good for 1, maybe 2 a game. We've seen her since the All-Star break sort of re-exert her dominance on the block. She's been a load to box out. She's been flying around in this series blocking shots on help side. When you put all of that package into someone who's also going to step out and hit 4 threes in a game, what do you do? Like, Becky Hammon's probably not sleeping this week trying to think about how to stop that, because Jonquil has been, if it's possible, better than she was post All-Star break. I think we were talking about how good she was post All-Star break and how much she turned it on late in the season, which helped the Liberty really turn it on late in the season. I think she's been even better than that in the playoffs and in this series in particular, especially for 4 of those 6 quarters where they had absolutely no answer for her. She might even be better in this series than she was in 2021 in the regular season when she won the MVP. It's hard to say that she was so good in 2021, but this might be the peak Jonquil that we've seen across her entire career for this last week or two, which is just amazing to watch unfold before our eyes after how she started the season with that stress fracture, coming out so slow to be where she is now. I know she has told Miles Ehrlich how proud she is of herself, and she should be. Any Liberty fan should be proud of her. She is really carrying the team right now.
Absolutely. I fully agree with everything you said. I think she is playing her absolute best basketball when it matters. Like, she has been phenomenal in the playoffs, phenomenal in this series. And we know, like, I know, like, the Liberty game plan a lot of times is, well, we'll just pass it to Jonquil in the paint and kind of let her figure it out because she can muscle her way in. But now you have that versatility where, like, she's not only doing that, like she's literally stepping into these threes with so much confidence and she is knocking them down. So like you said, like at that point, what do you do? Like there's only so much you can do to actually game plan for her when she is at this level. So just incredible. I mean, yeah, I'm gonna say her stat line again in game three, because like I just think it's amazing.
Yes, 27 points. How many assists did she have?
She had 3 assists, so not very high, but 27 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals.
Well, I was going to say, for her, though, when she's drawing doubles, I mean, 3 assists, I think that's a big deal. I think because they have shooters all around her, and if she's going to be able to pass out of that, like, three isn't like, it's not like she was Sabrina out here dropping 11, but
yeah. Can you imagine if that happened? Oh my god.
That might be coming. We might get a Jonquil quadruple double with blocks and assists before this series is done. Why not?
Oh, there you go. There's your hot take of the podcast. No, I actually gotta find that clip of like 55 burgers, 55 hot dogs, whatever. It's Mark's fault.
Her stat line. Yeah, we need that clip is her stat line. We need to put it in.
Yeah, we do. But yeah, just flip. Oh, last thing before we wrap this up, flipping the script. We talked about Jackie Young potentially being Finals MVP if the Aces win, but if the Liberty pulls us out, does Jonquil get Finals MVP?
It's no question. I mean, we got 2 games to go. If the Liberty pull it out, right? That means we have 2 more games.
Big if.
But if the Liberty pull it out, who knows what happens in those last 2 games? Who knows if we get one of those vintage Stewie games, or if Benaja Laney starts popping off like we saw in the semis? But to me right now, there's no question. If you were voting for a Liberty Finals MVP right now from that team, if it's not unanimous, someone's doing it wrong, because it's Jonquil by a landslide. And I just think if they are going to pull it out, you know, like I said, they got 2 games left, so who knows, someone could step up. But at the same time, I don't think they are going to pull it out without Jonquil continuing to play this way, because that's the biggest reason why they're here, and that's such a big factor in it. So, yeah, if they do pull it out, I think it's got to be her, and I think it will be her in that case.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, make sure you guys let us know who you think will be Finals MVP, who you think will win the WNBA Finals, if the Aces are going to wrap it up in 4, or if the Liberty do the thing and force a game 5. We will see you next Wednesday. Make sure you're tuning in to Her Hoop Stats playoff coverage throughout the entire week. You can find us on social media at Her Hoop Stats, myself at KrinaMM. You can find Calvin at CWetzel31. And yeah, we will see you on Coast to Coast next week.